Welcome to Between a Rock and a Hard Place. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Colleen.
And we're going to tell you about our life in Iraq.
It's going to be fun.
I hope so. Let's talk about church, Colleen.
This sounds like a little bit of an imposing topic.
It does. I feel like in college I took lots of classes about church, both like, what is the biblical church like? And how do you plant churches? And what should church look like? And we're not going to get into any of those things.
No.
So it's not quite that heavy.
The other thing we're not going to get into is what does the church of, like, ethnic Christians look like in Iraq? Because it's really complicated.
Right. Church history in the Middle East is most of church history. And so, you know, take a class. This is not the podcast for church history in the Middle East.
Syriac, Chaldean, Assyrian, Catholic, Orthodox, everything.
Armenian.
It's too complicated.
Yeah. It's very complicated.
I've never really even understood it, which is part of the reason we're not going to talk about it.
Right. Maybe someday in the future.
We'll do some research. Ugh.
Yeah, so we're not really going to talk about that. Aside from, like, I did have ethnic Christian students who would invite me to come to church with them.
Right.
And I never went, and part of me kind of regrets that, but part of me also recognizes that the me in Iraq did not have the patience to sit through a 2.5 hour long service in a language that I did not understand.
Oh. Yeah, that's probably fair.
I just wanted to go home.
It was a much more tired you.
Yes, it was a much more tired me. I would probably go now, just for the experience. Mm-hmm. But what we are going to talk about is the, for lack of a better term, I guess, Western church.
Options.
For people, for Westerners moving to Iraq, that they can get involved in. And absolutely a Westerner probably could get involved in some of those ethnic Christian churches.
It just would be, difficult.
And difficult, yeah.
In the sense of, yeah, having to know the language to be able to participate in that community and that kind of stuff.
There's not necessarily antagonism, though.
No.
Between ethnic churches and Western believers coming in.
It's more practical. Locality.
Right. Yeah. So there are a couple of different options,
possibilities. There's a lot of different options and possibilities. True. Just depending on the city, depending on the people and the different expat, the international makeup of that city.
And there are Kurdish-speaking churches and Arabic-speaking churches that are national-led churches. When I first moved to Iraq, the Kurdish church kind of let the Western expat community know, we don't really want you guys involved in the Kurdish church. We'd like for it just to be for Kurds.
So that it's not seen as a Western or American thing.
Right. And they had a lot of problems with Western expats coming in and poaching people out of their church and starting other Kurdish quote-unquote churches, and it was making it really hard for the Kurdish church to grow in any significant way. So, coming into that without, like, having been there for all of that drama happening, I was just like, all right, that's fine with me. I just won't ever go to a Kurdish church. And I never did. Did you?
I went to, I mean, one, it was a Kurdish house church. I went a couple of times, but I was primarily there to help out. I think I watched kids, mostly. I think I maybe attended one sermon, but also it was in Kurdish, and, like, as much as I did know some Kurdish at that point, a lot of the spiritual language I didn't know.
Yeah.
And so I really didn't understand much of it. It's not a place that I would have gone to build my own community or my own spiritual walk.
Right, right. You weren't going to get encouragement out of it, necessarily. The only Arabic-speaking church I went to was for a wedding. Mm-hmm. And there were definitely other Arabic-speaking expats that went there and got a lot out of it. But I also didn't speak Arabic, so I was never really interested in going. But it seemed like a really vibrant church. They had a pastor and worship leader, and I knew some, not students, but co-workers that went there and really mm-hmm. seemed to enjoy it quite a bit. Both of those were in Erbil. I know there's also an Arabic-speaking church. It might be Kurdish, actually. I don't actually know. In Duhok. Mm. It's a house church. It's pretty small.
Yeah. I mean, there are probably some in Suli. I never ran across those.
So the expat community kind of has to do its own church thing.
And that, in my city, came in two different ways. One, kind of a house gathering of different internationals from around the world, usually in English, although it wasn't everybody's first language. Mm-hmm. And it was just a way for those people to get together. And in some ways, you would almost consider it more of a Bible study or a fellowship group. There was never a pastor, per se. Different people would share that leadership, you know, each week, sign up on a list, and, you know, someone else would lead the songs, and someone else would host it, and it was a little more, everybody sits in the circle in the living room, kind of.
Right. Did yours rotate between houses, too?
Sometimes, yeah. Okay. It would get too big sometimes, and it would kind of, you know, go back and forth between just a couple houses or just one house, and then it would, you know, they would make the decision to, like, we need to split the group, and so then it would go back to rotating around, and then some people would leave, and, you know, again, it's an international community, and so there's constantly new people coming in, people leaving.
Yeah, very fluid participation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Some people are there just for, like, a month or 3 months, and so, you know, they pop in for a little bit, and then they head on.
Yeah. Yeah, that was also true in Erbil and Duhok. I never really went to the one in Duhok, except when I visited there before I lived there. And I remember at the time thinking that they were much more organized than the one in Erbil. The one in Erbil, I would say, was more like a prayer meeting
mm-hmm.
than really even a fellowship group, because we did worship songs, and usually someone shared, like, a verse or two, though there wasn't, like, study or preaching,
mm-hmm.
and then we would all share prayer requests and spend the rest of the time praying,
mm-hmm.
which I really enjoyed, but was still kind of missing out on that, like, I didn't have anyone teaching me the Bible. I missed that to some extent in that group. It was also really hard as a single female. Those meetings were usually held in the evenings
mm-hmm.
and at a rotating place that I didn't know where. Like, I didn't know the city of Erbil at all. And so I would either have to arrange for someone who did know where it was to, like, come pick me up in a taxi and take me, or not go. I remember one time I went with two of my roommates. We're trying to find this place, and it was dark. Like, it was nighttime for sure.
Well, and, you know, without consistent electricity, who knows if street lamps or,
right.
you know, city glow yeah. even exists.
There wasn't any of that. And we had gotten what I thought were very clear instructions, and I felt very confident that I could get there, which was my first mistake. My second mistake was telling the taxi driver, yeah, here's fine, just drop us off. We can walk there.
Dark.
Yeah, it wasn't very smart, I admit it. And so the three of us start traipsing around this neighborhood that I didn't know where we were in the dark. And I ended up calling the person who had given me the directions and saying, look, I don't know where I am. And they were like, okay, walk back out to the main road. Like, I at least knew where the main road was. And it wasn't lost. And we'll come and get you. They were like, don't talk to anyone, don't look at anyone, don't touch anything, like, just get out of the dark neighborhood, back to the main road, and you'll probably be okay. And they ended up having to come and pick us up. And
how far away were you?
Not far.
Okay.
We would never have found it, but we were just, like, we went back out to the main road and, like, took one road into the neighborhood and then another turn, and we were there, like, within 2 minutes of them picking us up. I think about that sometimes, and I'm like, I feel like that maybe was the most dangerous thing I ever did in Iraq. And it was because I was confident that I knew what I was doing. But we survived it. So that just made it a challenge.
Yeah.
And at that, after that, I was kind of like, well, I'll go if I know where it is.
Right.
And if I don't know where it is, then I'm not going to go. Which meant that I went, like, they also only held those meetings once a month.
Oh, okay.
So it wasn't every week. So it meant that I ended up going, like, maybe three times a semester.
Mm-hmm.
But that was my first year, that was the only kind of Christian fellowship amongst expats.
Mm-hmm. And the, kind of the expat fellowship group was the only one for internationals, really, my first several years as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then a few years in, actually was part of a group of people that was praying for an option for, like, an actual international church.
Right.
And shortly after that, yeah, there was an international church started in Suli, and it's still there. And it is much more your stereotypical Western church format, evangelical, mainstream.
And interdenominational to some extent.
Yeah, I think, because early on, I mean, it definitely didn't have any sort of denominational oversight.
Right, Which was kind of one of the interesting things when they tried to start one of those in Erbil initially, was that, like, everyone who was involved in starting the church, they were all from very different church backgrounds. And so it depended on the week as to what the church service was going to look like.
Mm-hmm.
Which, like, I kind of understand why they did it that way, but it was also kind of difficult to be like, well, what kind of church am I going to today?
Like, one day you show up and it's Presbyterian.
Are we Presbyterian today? Or are we Baptist?
Day we're Baptist?
Are we charismatic today? What's it gonna be?
I think those are the struggles too, though, that the International Church in Suli has faced, is a lot of questions about theology even outside of church style, you know, not just what kind of music are we going to play or that kind of stuff, but, you know, are we going to allow women to preach, or are we going to, you know, baptize infants? Are we going to
give communion every week?
Yeah. And who are we going to let have communion? And, like, it's especially when you have a church in a place where the rest of the population is largely not Christian.
Right.
And you are undoubtedly going to have visitors and curious people and people looking for community or looking for answers, you know, visit you. Then all of those questions kind of become more amplified.
Right.
Which seems so odd, because in some ways, one of the things I really enjoyed about the home fellowship group was the diversity.
Right.
That all of these people from different countries, different languages, different church backgrounds, all can worship together and have fellowship with one another.
Yeah.
In ways that if they were in their home countries, they might not.
Right. Right. Yeah. We had Brazilians, Scots, British, El Salvadorian, Finnish. I feel like there was another Scandinavian country in there, too. Americans, obviously. it was really beautiful. We would all find a worship song that we all knew in our native language, and we would all sing it all in our different language, and it was really cool.
Yeah.
When they started to try to codify, for lack of a better word, what church was, it led to some not great relationship things.
Mm-hmm.
And in, at least in Erbil, I don't know, maybe it's different in Suli, you have to register your church with the government in order to be recognized as a church, because kind of, sort of, it's illegal to meet as a church otherwise. Like, you could theoretically get in trouble for it. I never knew anyone that did.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. Like, if... I think it was really, if you called yourself a church, you needed to be registered with the government. Mm. That was kind of where it all fell apart for the initial international church in Erbil, was the government asked some very specific questions about, like, well, what does your church believe? And when you have the church planters believing different things and trying to, like, figure out what the meat of that was, it led to some...
Yeah.
Disagreements. Which is hard. Like, that's a hard thing to go through.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not specifically called to be a church planter, that's where I've seen the international church going now in De Hook and Erbil, is people have come specifically to plant a church for the international community.
Yeah, and that's what happened in Zuli,
yeah, too,
was a group came for that purpose. Mm-hmm. And we're a unified team in that purpose right from the start.
Right.
And I think it worked really well.
Yeah. And I think that's what it takes, is not people who are there for other reasons.
Doing other jobs. And here you've got the teacher and the ESL, you know, teacher and the NGO worker.
Which was part of my problem, was I was friends with the people that were starting the church in Erbil. And they wanted me to be more involved than I wanted to be, because I went to Iraq to teach Kurdish kids, and that's what I wanted to be doing with my time, not trying to go to worship band practice 3 days a week when I should be home grading papers, because that's what my job is. And so I ended up stepping back from that church more than they wanted me to, but, you know... I needed to focus on what I was doing, and so.
Hey, this is Robin, and I want to encourage all the listeners out there to consider moving to Iraq. It's something that you can pray about and consider and bring before the Lord and see if it's a place that you should be.
It's been really neat to see those international church planting groups come in and do that and serve the international community in that way. I think all of our team members now have been very involved in the international churches that exist in all the cities.
Mm-hmm.
And very encouraged by those,
yeah,
as well.
Some to the point of even interning, mm-hmm, with those churches.
Yeah. And God bless them. Like, I was telling someone the other day, I never went to Iraq with any interest in planting a church. Like, I don't want to plant a church. I don't want to do it here. I don't want to do it there. It takes a special kind of person. And I'm grateful for them. And I'm glad that it's not me.
Yeah, I feel like it's tied to almost an entrepreneurial sort of sense of, mm-hmm, this excitement over a vision of something and a willingness to push for that vision, no matter how impossible it might seem.
Right.
And that there's, like, a thrill in that.
Yeah.
It is not necessarily an excitement I share.
Right. Right. Yeah, so I did get to go to the International Church in De Hook the last time I was there visiting. And it seemed very, very organized, and people wanted to be there. And they meet in the same building every week. They have pastoral staff. They have people from within the church body that rotate worship leading. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were, like, in a sermon series, which was also not anything that ever happened while no. I was living there, because it rotated who was preaching each week, and they just did whatever they felt like, I guess. Mm-hmm. However the Spirit led to make it a little more Christian. so, yeah, it was neat to see that and see that the pastoral staff really did care about the people in their church, and it wasn't just,
mm-hmm,
I'm here to be here.
And that support, I think, is really key and beneficial to our staff members, yeah, as we're there. And, I mean, I feel like both you and I mentioned how sometimes the fellowship groups, while they were encouraging or interesting or, you know, things that we wanted to be a part of, We definitely supplemented those with sermons from the U.S.
Yeah.
And phone calls with people in the U.S.
Yeah.
And, you know, trying to get our encouragement and our teaching and our community in multiple locations. I mean, my team also did regular prayer meetings just with our team, you know, sometimes on Saturday mornings or something like that, just as a way to be encouraged and spend time in prayer and have community and fellowship. And
yeah, I think it's important to recognize that all the problems that the church encounters in the U.S. are also in other countries. Just because you're all there with a purpose to serve doesn't mean that you're all going to get along perfectly. And I think that that can be a thing that is hard about living there. But like we also have both said, it's also a really beautiful thing. I know it challenged me to rethink why I believe not core Christian things, but, you know, why do I believe what I believe about women leading a church? Or what about speaking in tongues and miracles and stuff like that? Dreams and visions, all of those things that come up because you're in a different mix of people. And I think
it's sometimes things you've never even thought about.
Right. And I think it's a beautiful part of the Christian family, the church body, is being able to worship together even though we don't agree about everything, mm-hmm. 100%.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a thing we really experience in the U.S. because we choose a church because we agree with what they're preaching.
Right.
Everyone. Which is good and right. It's a growing experience to be involved in a church anywhere, but especially in a different country. And I think we want to encourage people to be involved in the churches that they're in here in the U.S.
Yeah. Wherever you're at, get involved, be invested in your church community.
In part because that is what scripture calls you to do, to be involved in your church body, your local body of believers. But also, it's really a great way to know people,
mm-hmm.
and be challenged in what you believe and why you believe it.
And to grow.
Really need to have a firm grasp on before you move to a foreign country where people are going to ask you weird questions about what you believe.
Yeah. Things that you never really thought about.
Yeah. So, get involved in your church. Church is important. Do it.
We'd love to hear from you. You can find us at Servant Group International on Facebook or Instagram, and you should check out our blog and complete transcripts over at servantgroup.org.
And it's really helpful for us if you share our podcast or leave a review on whatever platform you listen to this podcast on. It helps us know that people are listening, and you can let us know what you want to hear next.
Thanks for listening.
Apparently, I have to talk louder. I'm the one bringing this whole thing down to a low. It's because I have such a deep, resonant voice. Really,
I mean, I don't have
a lower register.
A super high-pitched voice either.